Shante, and of course, you know I am listening to CKUT 90.3.
The rhymes you're about to hear me recite are dedicated to all of those that bite.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing.
On.
There is this thing going on.
What?
Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are 15 days into the month of September. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, we have part of the Pan-Canadian Disability Coalition's debate on the upcoming election. All that right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are tuned into The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you'd like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 2593, or email spokenword@ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter, @AvalancheCKUT.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to The Avalanche, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. On today's show, we have a recording of the Pan-Canadian Disability Coalition's debate on the upcoming federal election. This debate features members of major political parties speaking on disability-related issues. That's up next.
From coast to coast to coast, we acknowledge the ancestral and unceded territory of all the Métis, Inuit, and First Nations people that call this land home. On behalf of the Pan-Canadian Disability Coalition, we also want to extend our love and support to all the families, communities, and elders who are hurting as a result of the mass discoveries of unmarked graves and continue to suffer the ongoing effects of the Canadian residential school system. Please join me for a moment to acknowledge the harms and mistakes of the past and to consider how we can each, in our own way, try to improve forward in the spirit of reconciliation and collaboration. During this event, we can only have one candidate or party speaking at a time. This will allow a very inclusive, accessible environment. Tonight's questions were developed by the Pan-Canadian Disability Coalition, and we shared these with the parties on Fridays with a brief technical briefing for the event. The questions are not specific to any disability group and are focused on a broad number of topics that impact the community as a whole. Now, it's my pleasure to welcome our moderator for the event, Mr. Craig Oliver. Thank you. On to you, Craig.
You know that issues important to Canadians with disabilities are important to me, and I guess that's because I'm one of them. I guess we should start with introducing the panelists in alphabetical order, which will be the plan all evening. Manitoba New Democratic Party MP Daniel Blakey is number one in the lineup, and Bloc Québécois MP Marie-Hélène Gaudreau, Alberta Conservative Party of Canada MP Mike Lake, British Columbia Liberal Party of Canada MP Carla Qualtro, and from the Green Party, Kim Vance Mubunga. Glad to have you all here. Now I'd like to give each panelist a minute for their opening remarks. We're starting with Mr. Blakey.
Thank you very much, Craig. And I just want to start by saying greetings from Manitoba on Treaty 1 territory and the homeland of the Métis Nation. And I want to thank the Pan-Canadian Disability Coalition for having put this debate together to try and hear more from federal parties about what they're prepared to do for Canadians living with disabilities who, prior to the pandemic, already were facing extraordinary challenges getting the kinds of support that they need in order to realize their potential and live with dignity. Those, you know, too often across the country, people living with disabilities are legislated into poverty by mean-spirited support programs that don't go far enough. And that's why the federal NDP called on the federal government in the pandemic context to get serious about introducing a benefit that would apply equally to all Canadians across the country at a rate of $2,200 a month. And that in the context of the pandemic, which I think really exposed a lot of fault lines in Canadian society, and particularly for Canadians living with disabilities who were slow to get any kind of help at all from the federal government. And when it was finally announced, it took much longer to be implemented. So I'm looking forward tonight to being able to talk a little bit about some of the advocacy that the NDP did for people living with disabilities during the pandemic and our vision for a post-pandemic Canada that supports people living with disabilities to be full participants in Canadian society, to live with dignity, and to realize their full potential.
Thank you. And now Quebec, Bloc Québécois MP, Marie-Hélène Gaudreau, Madame Gaudreau.
Oui, bonjour à vous tous.
Hello, thank you all, and hello. I'm going to be speaking to you in order to have the simultaneous interpretation available. So obviously, it's going to take me a little bit longer, but I'm very happy to be amongst you. You know, in the last 2 years, I was a spokesperson for Vivre Ensemble, and there's nothing more important than to feel united and obviously accompanied with our differences, with our challenges. And obviously the Bloc Québécois is very interested specifically to the big issues, the big field that what people in Quebec need to experience. And obviously we'll have the opportunity to discuss together what we are going to be supporting in these projects. And obviously our claims, which wasn't heard in the motion last December 2nd, which is to increase, without any conditions, the transfer, health transfers that would not only allow people who were affected by COVID, but also for people who have certain handicaps and have suffered a lot throughout this pandemic. So I'm a person that comes from the community, and the experience that I had at the Chamber of Commons shows me that you should never forget everything that every representative does for us. And that's what we do here in Quebec. And so I am from the Haute-Laurentide sector. For those who are in Quebec, I am very happy to be with you today. And let's hope that the exchanges will be fruitful.
Thank you very much. Next, the Alberta Conservative Party of Canada MP, Mike Lake.
Hi, it's fantastic to be here. And I just want to thank the organizers and all of the organizations for putting this on. it's nice to be, you know, we live in one of the most divisive times, I think, in most of our lifetimes. And it's nice to be on a debate, a conversation where I hope largely in terms of at least outcomes, we can agree on many things. We might have a hearty conversation about how we get there. But for me, the issue is very personal. I have a 25-year-old son with autism. His name is Jaden. And I'll tell a story as part of my intro. When Jaden was 16 and my daughter Janae was 13, we did an interview and the interviewer asked my daughter, Janae, I'm going to ask you a really tough question. Do you ever wish your brother was quote unquote normal like every other kid? And Janae, without skipping a beat at 13 years old, said, well, honestly, since Jaden was diagnosed with autism before I was born, I don't exactly know what a normal brother is like. So Jaden kind of is my normal having autism. And the interviewer said, you love him just the same kind of. And she said, well, if Jaden didn't have autism, he wouldn't be the same as Jaden is now. And Janae didn't have a choice. She was born into a family with a brother with autism, but the school that they went to did have a choice. And they included Jaden in a regular classroom right from kindergarten to grade 12. And when I'm speaking around the world, I use that story to illustrate the fact that, you know, for people that were in that classroom, their life is immeasurably different because Jaden was in that class. And yeah, their perception in life is different because Jaden was in that class. And the more that everybody in Canada's normal includes people with disabilities, includes all of us, really, the more that we're going to benefit when our schools include people like Jaden, when our workplaces include people like Jaden, when our neighborhoods and our housing places include people like Jaden, we're all going to benefit. And as a society, we're going to benefit from the unique skills and abilities that all Canadians bring to the table.
Thank you. Next up from British Columbia, Liberal Party of Canada's Carla Quattro. Carla Quattro. Nice to see you, Carla.
Thanks, Craig. Hello, bonjour tout le monde. My name is Carla Quattro. I'm joining you today from the traditional territory of the Tsawwassen and Musqueam First Nations. I'm the mother of four, a former Paralympic swimmer and medalist, a human rights lawyer, disability advocate, and volunteer. I've been the member of parliament for Delta BC for the past 6 years, and I've also been a cabinet minister since then. In 2015, I was named Canada's first ever minister responsible for Canadians with disabilities, and I remain in that portfolio today, although my title has evolved to Minister of Disability Inclusion. I was born legally blind and very much identify as a person with a disability. It's foundational to who I am as a person and has really shaped the way I look at the world. I'm really excited to be here as part of this historic conversation to speak to our shared progress on disability inclusion and to the Liberal Party's 2021 platform, which I believe to be the most ambitious and comprehensive set of commitments to Canadians with disabilities ever put out by any political party in the history of our country. Thanks, Craig.
Thank you. And now from the Green Party, Kim Vance-Mwabunga.
Hi, and thanks everyone for joining. I must say that it's quite a treat in this time of Zoom fatigue to see 754 participants engaged in such a platform, and we're very honored to be here. I'm Zooming in today from Chibuktuk or Halifax on the traditional and unceded territories of the Mi'kmaq people. You all know the Green Party doesn't have a lot of representation in the House of Commons, so we have some alternate structures to advise and
first
come up with good platforms. So I am the federal Green Party critic for diversity and inclusion. A little bit about me. I've spent the last almost 20 years running an international non-governmental organization that's advocated for inclusion and human rights, mostly at the United Nations, working in particular for women, 2S LGBTIQ people, and people with HIV/AIDS. I'm also a mother and a spouse within a multiracial and a multi-abled family. And so much of my time outside of my professional work fighting for inclusion involves fighting for inclusion for my family members, access to education and employment, and fighting for a world free from racial discrimination. So that's a little bit about my background. We'll get into some of our more detailed issues. We released our platform today, which is 103 pages long. So I encourage anyone who wants a nice deep read to go and take a look, but I'll be highlighting some sections of that this evening. Thank you.
And now we will go to the first of the four questions, which each of these panelists will be asked on behalf of their parties as we go along. The first question is this. How will your party commit to raise the health and the incomes and take so many Canadians who are disabled out of poverty? And when do you think that's possible, and how are you going to do it? Mr. Blakey, we'll begin with you.
Well, thank you very much for that question. And as I stated in my opening remarks, I mean, the NDP believes firmly that what we saw through the pandemic was a final kind of realization on the part of government and also just a lot of Canadians that, you know, what it takes to live every month, a kind of minimum standard for a decent living is in the ballpark of $2,000 a month. And we know that Canadians living with disabilities who have had to rely on disability pension plans provincially and federally, whatever program they're accessing, none of them come close to providing what is actually a livable income that keeps people even at the poverty line, let alone above the poverty line. So that's why we proposed a benefit of $2,200 a month for people living with disabilities to recognize that CERB standard and the fact that often people living with disabilities have additional costs that they have to bear in order to accommodate their own unique challenges. So that's a very clear proposal that we put forward on the income question. You know, there's a number of proposals that the NDP has been putting forward for some time that we think could help improve the lives of people living with disabilities. First and foremost among them would be a national pharmacare plan, something that a number of studies have suggested could expand access to prescription drugs, make them more affordable for Canadians, and ultimately cost less than Canadians already spend on prescription drugs in the kind of hodgepodge system that we have divided up between provinces and other kinds of insurance schemes. So getting that right and moving on it now is an important way that we can expand access and save money.
And now we're going to the Bloc Québécois and Madame Gaudreau.
Oui, tout à fait. En fait.
Yes, so the solution is quite clear. It's simple. It's not a proposal from the Bloc Québécois, it's a request from Quebec, from the province, and from the territories to absolutely, currently, and this has been months that we've been speaking about this, whether it's just to increase the number of issues that have happened throughout the pandemic, but the people that are the most abandoned are the people who are vulnerable, who have a handicap. In order to be 100% sure to be able to, in any event, there's a few solutions. The first one is to get the request of the whole, because on December 2nd, there was only the Liberal government that unfortunately rejected our motion to be able to give the fair share to the provinces. And after that, when we speak about a tax credit, I'm thinking about you parents who have children who are younger, and even the ones that aren't as young. You're the ones who know very well the situation of your loved one. I had a loved one for 20 years who had a degenerative disease with my father, and the access to care, the accessibility was such a challenge and such a headache that we wasted so much time. And access also happens with affordable housing that is accessible. And for decades now, ourselves at the Bloc Québécois, we find it despicable that housing has not had its fair share. So we are asking for a percentage of the budget, of the annual budget, to be allocated for renovation and construction of social affordable housing. Thank you.
So we sweep across the country to Alberta and Mike Lake of the Conservative Party of Canada.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. And it's a great question. And there's so many different things that we can do. I think we can start by making sure that people with disabilities aren't the last people that we consider when we're taking on new programs like we did with COVID. The COVID support wasn't enough, and it was much later than almost everybody else was thought of during the COVID crisis. And that's a problem. We need to be thinking up front about these things. The Conservative Party has put a few ideas on the table in terms of our platform. We've said that we're going to make it easier to qualify for the disability tax credit, which of course unlocks a lot of other benefits across the country, including the Registered Disability Savings Program, which was something that was implemented when we were in government in 2007. We've also said that we would increase transfers to the provinces for healthcare by $60 billion over 10 years, a significant increase, something that the provinces are unanimously asking for, and something that the provinces don't unanimously agree on very many things. So, but most importantly, we need to get people with disabilities to work. People with disabilities have incredible skills and abilities, and we're robbing ourselves of entire skill sets and benefits as a country that we need because people with disabilities are unemployed, and we need to remove barriers. We've proposed increasing the Canada Workers Benefit significantly and increasing the disability supplement of that workers benefit from almost double at $1,500. And that was, again, it was an initiative put forward by our government when we were in government previously. It's something that we can improve upon and ensure that there's not a disincentive to Canadians working.
Seconds. And thank you very much. And so we're moving next door to British Columbia and MP Carla Qualtro.
Thanks, Craig. So a Liberal government, re-elected Liberal government, will continue to frame the issue of financial security for Canadians with disabilities as one of poverty reduction. So we're going to continue to work with the disability community to address the underlying causes of poverty, which include, of course, systemic discrimination, and the barriers people face every day. They include lacks of access to affordable housing and employment, and they include a lack of dignified levels of income. You know, over the past 6 years, I believe we have reframed the conversation around disability in this country, moving away from the medical and charity models and taking a human rights-based approach. And with our Disability Inclusion Action Plan and the tabling of the legislation to create the Canada Disability Benefit, we added another element, and that was poverty reduction. Really, it committed to addressing all of these underlying issues. And, you know, with the Disability Inclusion Action Plan, including the creation of the disability benefit, which will reduce poverty amongst persons with disabilities in the same way that the GIS and the child benefit have reduced poverty amongst for seniors and families with children. It includes an employment strategy, a modern and dignified approach to eligibility for Government of Canada disability programs, putting a disability lens on all of our decisions. You know, and of course, all of this work to address disability poverty will lift hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of persons with disability out of poverty and feed into our government's broader poverty reduction strategy called Opportunity for All. The message here, Craig, is we will work with the community for the community, and we will not back down in our commitment to poverty reduction.
Thank you. And now we'll hear from Ms. Vance of the Green Party. Nice to have you here. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, as we already know, as with many equality-seeking groups, Canadians with disabilities and their families have really suffered disproportionately during the pandemic. And even prior to the pandemic, people with disabilities lived very disproportionate levels of poverty and exclusion. Our platform released today highlights three planks, all of which have intersecting ways of bringing people with disabilities out of poverty. One being a green future, a green and sustainable future, life with dignity, and a just society. And all three of these contain elements. But I'm going to talk specifically about one right now, which is a guaranteed livable income. The question asked, when could this commitment be realized? Well, we've already seen during the pandemic how quickly an incentive like this can be turned around and administered. So there's really no excuse for delays to implementing these kinds of supports that are needed across the board. The pandemic has shown us that we can make that system work, and poverty remains an ongoing crisis and is going to remain an ongoing crisis, just like the climate crisis. Once we deal better with COVID recovery. So instituting a basic income for people living with disabilities so that none live in poverty
by number one, converting the disability tax credit to a refundable credit as a first step in creating that national basic income program for working age adults. And I want to say it's very great to hear the conservatives and liberals talk about incentives to work, but incentives to work would require a redesigning of the Canada Pension Plan disability benefit test so that it would allow and permit employment and allow individuals with disabilities to work while retaining their basic eligibility.
Thank you, Madame Vance Bamunga. We appreciate hearing from you. And now, at this point, every panelist is going to have a chance to respond to what they've heard from others, beginning with you, Mr. Blakey.
Well, thank you very much. I think for me, the important thing to respond to is to talk about, you know, liberal legislation for disability benefit. I reviewed that bill when it was tabled just before the end of session, when the government clearly had an intention to go into an election, the one we now find ourselves in, untimely though it is. And the fact of the matter is that legislation doesn't have any details. And that's a problem, not just in terms of assessing where the government plans to go in respect of this promise that was made in the speech from the throne and then and then had a multi-year consultation announced in the budget rather than an actual program to deliver timely income assistance to people living with disabilities. This bill also means that the program would be established by a cabinet and have no legislative protection, because what's established by cabinet can be taken away by cabinet overnight. And I think any meaningful income support program deserves better protection than that.
From the Bloc Québécois now, Madame Goudreau. Go ahead.
En fait, on va parler des vrais
affaires. Actually, we're going to talk, let's talk turkey. Promises or wishes, well, this is nothing if after a few years we're unable to demonstrate how we can go forward. It takes a true will, and the true will is when you put actions towards. Surprisingly, when I saw the prorogation last summer, we had to start over and wait and the budget and say, okay, here's a different commitments, but what's the true action to be able to help? It was to say that, no, this isn't the time to talk about health and to help our people that are the most vulnerable. It'll be after the pandemic, but the pandemic isn't over. So the will, I need to hear it, and I need to have some concrete commitments at the House. And if a model is interesting, when we talk about the social safety net, I would invite you, Dickers, to see what's happening in Quebec. It's something that could be a source of inspiration, because it's together that we're going to go together. But to do that, we have to respect the commitments. And I am very disappointed from the last mandate for you. Okay, on to the next.
Merci bien. And now from the Conservative Party of Canada, Mr. Lake.
Yeah, thank you. Daniel kind of stole a little bit of my thunder. I was going to say, when you take a look at the bill, the legislation proposed at the very end, there's no substance to it whatsoever. And if the Liberals were really serious about this and so many other things, we wouldn't be doing a Zoom call having an election debate right now. We would be preparing for next week when the House would be sitting and we would be actually able to debate the legislation and work to pass things that we might agree on. And in this case, I think that most of us would agree on at least the spirit behind the legislation, because there wasn't a whole lot of substance there in the first place. But I have a lot of respect for Carla and her passion and her heart on these things. But she uses the word frame and reframe. And so often that seems to be the Liberal sort of MO on all of these issues, is so much consideration to framing and reframing, but not a lot of consideration for action. It's almost always, when it comes to disabilities, the last thing considered, whether it was the Accessibility Act at the end of the parliament just before the 2019 election, whether it was the COVID supports, whatever it might be, it's the last thing considered. The only thing that was rushed through Parliament was medical assistance in dying legislation that the disability community was almost universally opposed to. And that's the only time that the Liberals seem to move quickly on a piece of legislation. We have to do better than this.
Well, that probably deserves a response from Carla Qualtro of the Liberal Party. Go ahead, Craig,
and thanks, everyone. Listen, you know, I think it's important to remind us all of how far we've come in the past 6 years, whether it was the consultations, the historic inclusive consultations on the Accessible Canada Act, committing to nothing without us with respect to the disability committee and not community and not imposing laws and changes and policies on and programs on individuals who have historically been imposed upon their entire lives. We put in place the Accessible Canada Act. We acceded to the optional protocol of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We had an immediate pandemic response. I'll remind you all, we set up our COVID disability advisory group within weeks of the pandemic coming to Canada. It was hailed by the UN as the best practice of COVID response. We ensured we put a disability lens on all of our COVID decision making. And let me tell you how committed we were. Last fall, we started talking about the Disability Inclusion Action Plan as the next step after the Accessible Canada Act, which would include Canada Disability Benefit. You know, this didn't just happen at the end of June. The community has been working with our government for years on this. It includes an employment strategy. It's the most comprehensive set of commitments to persons with disabilities, as I said. You know, it's important, Mike, to use the proper framing, and because we've moved to a human rights-based approach to disability inclusion. That's important. It's important to talk respectfully and inclusively about everything we do for and with this community.
And finally, we'll hear from Madame Advance Mbunga from the Green Party. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, just want to take on 2 points. One, in terms of creating more supplements, this just contributes to a patchwork approach to disabilities that exists right now. That's very confusing landscape for people trying to navigate the system. There are some easy and universal tools that can be used, and we've seen how they can be used. So creating more supplements or credits or programs that create to that patchwork approach is not going to be helpful. And in terms of the Liberal government's commitment to enforcement of all these international recommendations, I'm part of a coalition right now that's boycotting meetings with the government because we just get nowhere in terms of implementation of these international commitments and promises. It's like we're spinning our wheels and we've been doing it for years. So it's great to say that you support all these things, but if you don't put things in place to implement them, they're meaningless.
Important responses from everyone. We'll take a break now for 3 minutes while the translators do their duty, and then we'll be back with yet another question.
Well, thank you, everyone. So this was a very interesting question. So we asked if an election was held today. Do you know which party you would vote for? And the results are, out of the 723 people, 65% said that they do know who they would vote for. 8% said no at this point. And interestingly, but maybe not interestingly, 27% are still undecided. So tonight really has an opportunity to sway some people.
I'm Craig Oliver. We're back with this wonderful national debate on such an important subject. And we're going to start with question number two, which is, how would your government work with the disability community and provincial and territorial governments to deliver financial support for working age Canadians with disabilities so that their other provincial or territorial support won't be affected or reduced and will not create additional barriers, which is important. And once again, panelists will answer in alphabetical order. So it's over to you, Daniel Blakey of the New Democratic Party.
Well, thank you very much for the question, Craig. I think, you know, it has been a very interesting time in the pandemic because often what we hear is, well, you know, the federal government can't be telling the provinces what to do. And that is certainly true. And there is a lot of responsibility within provincial jurisdiction to support Canadians living with disabilities. But New Democrats have often believed that the fact that certain issues fall within provincial jurisdiction shouldn't be an impediment to bringing the provinces together with the federal government to discuss what best practices are and how we can set standards that ensure a minimum quality of care that's adequate for people no matter where they live in the country. And we saw in respect of childcare recently that when the federal government actually finds some political will and is willing to put some meaningful funding on the table and enshrine that in an agreement so provinces know what they can expect, that you can actually make progress with the provinces. And there have been other examples within the pandemic where progress has been made in areas of provincial jurisdiction or shared jurisdiction that we've been able to move forward. And for New Democrats, this just confirms what we have believed to be true always, which is that there is a desire across provinces to make progress on a number of issues, including, we think, supporting people with disabilities has to be one of those tables, and that the federal government can play a key role, that the pandemic is an important time to try and make progress on the issue of supporting working age people living with disabilities and getting adequate, not just income supports in place, but also ensuring that it's done in a way that provinces continue to provide other kinds of support that people rely on, whether that's building affordable housing, social housing, in fact, so that people's rent is geared to the income that they receive, whether it has to do with improving public transportation options for people who don't have their own vehicle or require more accessible transportation than they could afford on their own, to a whole range of health supports that and health services that people need in order to live a full life with any particular kind of disability. So those are things that we believe can be done. We feel that the pandemic was an important time to act and that it's not too late to act with that sense of urgency, although better would have been to already have started this process with the provinces.
We're going to move on to the next speaker.
What I hear is exactly what we've noticed. But I think that people need to understand there are people from Quebec and from other provinces that don't understand and what the raison d'être of the Bloc Québécois is, and to what point it's particularly difficult to conjugate with different intentions, all of this looking for a certain power. So the advantage that I have in comparison to my colleagues is that we are looking at the interests that concern us all. So we were talking about giving access to affordable care and facilitate access and the responsibility for you with your issues. There is nothing better than what happens in each province. They have the expertise. And I'll give an example, even in terms of workers' employment insurance. We had arrived at a deadline to be able to give 50 weeks of benefits for people who have a grave illness, which could be a long-term illness or have special needs. What happened? Nothing. Just an announcement that maybe we're going to do it, but at the time of, there are people who were calling us and all this. But for me, this really affects me because they're nice words, but concretely, we have to take care of what we're good at. So I'm relying on the provinces, especially that we are claiming the health transfer and help, complementary help. And I think that during the pandemic, we have enough to manage already in Quebec and in Canada, both for international agreements, our free trade agreements, our borders, and have access to benefits and programs, even the PCRE that was extended to October 23rd. And even those who are working on the relaunch of the economy, they don't have enough employees because there aren't enough employees. It's not these needs for a job that we need. We need to act, and we're going to continue this discussion later.
And we'll go to our next individual, Mr. Lake.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to seize on a few comments from some of the other folks on this panel. I agree wholeheartedly with the sort of spirit of action that Marie-Hélène's talking about. Kim talked about a patchwork earlier, and she's bang on in terms of what's happening across the country and within the federal government, just a complete patchwork of programs. And Daniel talked really about what I call the convening power of the federal government. We have a power to show leadership. We have a power to bring our provincial partners together and talk about solutions for some of these things, but then move on to that action. Our party's put forward one of the things that we've identified for years as a problem in relation to poverty is that with this patchwork of programs out there, provincial and federal, there's these crazy situations where people can actually be made worse off by working and getting a job. They actually get more clawed back than they're making. That's completely ridiculous. We have to do better than that. Sorry, a little bit distracting. We've said that we'll up the Canada Workers Benefit to talk about any workers that are low income but working and take away that disincentive, but that we would also up that disability supplement up to $1,500. So someone with a disability can make $2,800 from the workers benefit and another $1,500 from the disability supplement to help get them over what Jim Flaherty used to refer to as a welfare wall and overcome this ridiculous situation that leaves people with disabilities or people in lower income jobs worse off when they're working than when they're not working. And there's so much more that we can talk about. I only wish that we were sitting as a parliament right now so we could be debating these issues next week.
Next is Minister Quantrill. Carla Quantrill.
Hi, thank you. What I'll say, everyone, is that work has already begun. We introduced the Canada Disability Benefit legislation in the House of Commons in June of this year and commit in our platform to reintroduce and implement this legislation if reelected. This will create a direct monthly payment to low-income Canadians with disabilities aged 18 to 64. The most important work that needs to be done with respect to the benefit is to absolutely ensure that provinces don't claw back their provincial income support as a result of people getting this benefit, and that the supports and services people get as a result of being on the provincial income support, like transit and pharmacare and assisted devices, aren't negatively impacted. But the work with provinces has long begun. Prior to the pandemic, provincial and federal ministers for disabilities met for the first time in Canadian history. Never under a previous federal government have there been a federal provincial table for discussion on these important issues. We did that. We have strong relations. We don't always agree on everything, but we work together and move things forward. And that's why the first thing I did when the legislation was tabled was call my provincial ministerial colleagues to say that my expectation was that this benefit couldn't be clawed back. We saw how some provinces clawed back their supports and benefits in relation to CERB, and we needed to lay a marker down early so this wouldn't be tolerated with a disability benefit. The goal of this is to provide more money to people, not more money to the provinces. We also know that it's possible to reach a no clawback agreement because we did it. A Liberal government did it with the Canada Child Benefit, and we can do it again, and we will do it again because it's really important. And I also think the Canada Disability Benefit can be a catalyst for provincial and territorial governments to reconceive and improve their own system. That's what's at stake here. But it's really also essential to ensure that people with lived experience contribute to the design and parameters. Again, heard this loud and clear of the benefit that the Disability Advisory Group and many people with disabilities across Canada, they don't want a government to impose this. They want to work together, and we will, in the same spirit of collaboration of the Accessible Canada Act. Thanks.
And now we'll go on to Ms. Vance from the Green Party of Canada.
Thank you. I want to speak directly to that last poll that said that 35% of you are undecided at this point. And I want you to reflect on the questions that have been given to us today. Why are we here? We're here because there's a crisis. There's a crisis in poverty for people with disabilities. You have to believe that what got us to this crisis is successive Liberal and Conservative governments. There is no other explanation for how we arrived at this crisis. So I am imploring you, the 35% of undecided voters, to consider an alternate approach, because the strategic voting to Liberal and Conservative governments isn't working. It's not getting you what you want. Some of the additional financial supports that the Green Party is committed to putting in place, along with the guaranteed livable income, is to address this patchwork approach right now in terms of a multiplicity of acts, standards, policies, and programs. And along with working with both provincial and territorial governments, we want to work side by side with Indigenous governments as well. I haven't seen them named as a partner in this approach. We want to create a Canada Disabilities Act that will express Canadians' vision of a more equitable society rather than the current confusion that exists right now. To also support a national equipment fund to provide equipment such as wheelchairs and accessibility tools to assist persons with disabilities to fully participate in work and community life. and this can be a joint program between provincial, territorial, and Indigenous governments, and also provide sufficient federal health transfer payments to the provinces and territories and to our Indigenous populations directed at rehabilitation for those who have become disabled and want to return to work.
When we talk about working age Canadians with disabilities, there are reforms that we can undertake to our employment insurance system. For instance, we've vigorously advocated in this parliament and long before for a 50-week sickness benefit. And we're also proposing a lot more flexibility around employment insurance so that people who have episodic sickness or disability can access the EI system in a way that actually makes sense for them and works for them. So they're not having to leave work for longer periods of time. But I think it's also important to mention, I've heard from a lot of folks in the disability community who feel that the current culture of disability support is a work or die culture, and that those who aren't able to engage in regular employment are simply left behind. And I think that's why it's important to talk about income assistance that isn't dependent on employment, and not just to do that, but to do it in a way that doesn't build more stigma for people living with disabilities and aren't able to support themselves through regular employment, to recognize that they still have a lot to offer our communities, and that we want them to be able to live with dignity in our communities and to make the kinds of contributions that they're able to make. For some, that'll be employment, and for others, it will be other things.
Well, thank you very much for that. I think we now go to Madame Goudreau.
Oui, merci, Monsieur.
Yes, Oliver. Thank you, Mr. Oliver. So I heard a little bit earlier that the possibilities of having programs and support systems and having more money. But once again, I'm forced to admit that, unfortunately, we need to have the guarantee that the money will be available and also easy to get. I've heard too many times people say that finally, it's so complicated that with my handicap on top of it, or the lack of accessibility to high speed, for example, because or just going from point A to point B is difficult. So I really have this worry that when the federal government wishes to reach we're talking about 6.6 million people from Quebec and Canada who live with a handicap that doesn't allow them to have a life that is simple. What we saw with the pandemic, we're forced to admit that the solution is to help and to give the sums to the provinces to be able to do what's right. Thank you.
For his response, Mr. Lake from the Conservative Party of Canada.
Well, my position in this panel is fortunate in that I get to go before Carla so far multiple times. So on this one, you know, I'll point out that Carla mentioned consultation, and consultation is very important. I've been part of different meetings and receptions that she's held, but we haven't been included in many of the consultations so far as opposition parties. That consultation is critically important, but it can't take the place of action. There is no reason that a competent government taking issues seriously can't take action on the common ground, on the places that we agree we need to move forward, and at the same time consult. And a continuous loop of consultation and action, or a simultaneous process of consultation and action, is what we need. And, you know, the Canada Disability Benefit that's been talked so much about here, this bill, I would use the opportunity to ask the minister responsible for the bill, beyond just consultation, which you can do without a piece of legislation, what does the Canada Disability Benefit, what does the bill actually do?
I'm baffled that you're asking this question, but let me lay it out. It sets up a structure where we can create a direct monthly payment for low-income working-age Canadians with disabilities. You know, what I'm really concerned about is there are party platforms that are silent on the issue of the need for such a benefit or type of income support. I respect that other parties have a different structure for income support, and let's talk about that. But the Conservatives are even silent on the need for this support. But let me reassure you, Mike, that we're both working with the disability community and acting. We're doing a lot of things at the same time. You know, I want this benefit to be in place as quickly as possible, but I will not do this without ensuring that provinces won't claw back other income supports and leave people no better off or even worse off. And the NDP suggesting that you can move forward with this with or without agreement of the promises is just way too risky. You know, we won't achieve the critical outcome of making sure people are better off if we impose this. You know, we put in place the legislation to put a stake in the ground, to signal the provinces that we're serious about this, to tell the disability community that we're serious about this, but we don't want to impose a benefit structure that doesn't work for them, to maybe act as a catalyst for the much needed, you know, overhaul of provincial support systems. And this isn't something we're just doing for an election platform. We've been leading up to this moment for 6 years, and we're going to get it done.
Thank you. And finally, in this round, from the Green Party.
I don't want to sound like a broken wheel here, but I'll say it again. There's been 6 years of government to get this rolling and to get this moving. Prior to that, there were many years of Liberal governments to get this moving. We are at a crisis, and we're here because of successive Liberal and Conservative governments who've not taken the action we need. It's not enough to say 6 years into your mandate that now we're ready to get this moving just before we call an election. It's just not enough. There's also a lot of problematic tests in the current revisions that don't encourage strong incentives to work. And I'll echo my NDP colleague who talked about the fact of people who are periodically not able to work, but then able to work. And it doesn't take these kinds of considerations appropriately into place. So I would say again, you've had the time to really work on these issues, and we're here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Craig, for that. Before we take this break, we want to go and ask our audience members joining us for another poll question. And our next poll question this evening is, do you plan to vote in the upcoming election? Your responses are yes, no, or undecided. We're going to take a 3-minute break and we'll be back shortly. Thank you. Okay, well, it looks like that we have everyone was able to participate, and I'm really excited to share the results. It says, do you plan in the upcoming federal election? 97% of our participants said yes. That's excellent. 1% have said no, and 3% are still undecided. So again, to all our parties who have a little bit of work to do, it sounds like, yes, in getting some of these people out, but we're very confident by the end of this evening, we'll have some change of hearts. So now we're back to Craig Oliver in Ottawa, who's going with our third question for the evening.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to the third segment in this really important discussion of national issues, and in particular in the issue of Canadians with disabilities. Panelists, this is the third question you'll be asked to respond to, and it is this. We know that almost 60% of Canadians with disabilities, especially, are unemployed. They need jobs, jobs, jobs. And how will your party work with the disability and business communities both to develop robust employment strategies that focus on meaningful employment and provide support for Canadians with disabilities and employers as well? As always, we begin in alphabetical order with Daniel Blakey of the New Democratic Party.
Well, thanks again for a great question. And part of the opportunity that I've had as the NDP's disability inclusion critic over the last couple of years in meeting with folks living with disabilities who are advocating for themselves and the people in their community is to get a sense of, you know, how many folks there are that have such amazing talent and an ability to contribute in various ways. If we can get employers to understand the talent and potential that's out there and some of the ways that some simple accommodations can help people living with disabilities deploy those talents in the service of Canadian firms in order to be able to accomplish their goals. So there's certainly an educational component. I think going out and talking to employers about the potential that exists and about some of the ways that they can modify their workplace. I think showing by leadership what that can look like by building some flexibility into the employment insurance system, for instance, would be a way of showing employers the kinds of simple tweaks that can happen whether it's in a program like EI or whether it's in a workplace specifically, in order to be able to accommodate people with incredible talent, but who don't fit the kind of 9 to 5 Monday to Friday work schedule because some of the additional challenges that they're facing in life. So certainly there's an educational component, and then working with employers to identify what the costs of some of those accommodations are, and then figuring out a fair way to help employers figure out how they're going to pay for those things so that they can begin to recruit people living with disabilities into their organizations is important. But we've also seen places where the federal government itself has failed to be an example. So when we think about government websites, for instance, and a litany of them that still are not accessible to Canadians with living with disabilities, it's hard to go out and preach to the private sector about what they ought to be doing. So I definitely think there's more to do in-house to lead by example. We shouldn't wait for all of that to be perfect before engaging with the private sector, but government has to both show leadership and begin that dialogue and show leadership in establishing a dialogue for how to employ more people living with disabilities.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blakey. Our next responder on this is, and it's an important economic question, the Bloc Québécois and Madame Goudreau.
Oui, monsieur. Merci beaucoup, monsieur.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Oliver. So once again, I am forced to admit that we in Quebec already have measures in place. It's a contribution with Service Quebec, where an employer is going to have help in order to integrate a person who has a handicap, whichever it may be. The resources are present. So what I understand is the federal government needs to do a transfer to facilitate and accommodate. So obviously, they're forced to admit that Quebec is going to have its fair share, just like the daycare centers. And I can tell you that it works very well on our end, because when we talk about particular needs, there's nothing better than people who see it up close. So that's why we tell the federal government that we have to take care of the big issues that affect the place where we end up in terms of the environment and the international economic development, but everything that affects social services, health, education, and all of this is since Canada exists. And there are jurisdictions from the provinces. So obviously, someone from Quebec is going to completely support this, because we know that it's work on the field that we need in order to accompany or even to give a little bit of an extra nudge or help to parents or brothers and sisters to be able to accompany people who live with this vulnerability. I have done it myself in my life, and it is a solution. So I'm going to be I completely agree with that. We do what is important, but we have to do it on a provincial and territorial level. Thank you.
Next to the Conservative Party of Canada and Conservative MP Mike Lake.
Yeah, I really appreciate this question. I'll address it from a couple of fronts. So first off, on the employer's side, I think back to conversations that we had. I know back when we were in government, we funded something called Ready, Willing, and Able. Continues to this day. It had, I think, a two-year gap, and I think there was some interim funding provided through another program called the Enabling Accessibility Fund.
Do you realize there is this thing? Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Avalanche, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are just listening to the Pan-Canadian Disability Coalition's debate on the upcoming federal election. If you'd like to listen to the remainder of this debate, you can contact the host at wavefrontcenter.ca. And that completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, check out our Twitter, at AvalancheCKUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you'd like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate and support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact The Avalanche at avalancheckut.ca or CKUT's spoken word department at 514-448-4041, extension 2593, or spoken word at ckut.ca. Stay tuned for Herse, that's up next.
Un jardín comienza con una semilla y una visión alimentada con la luz del sol. Sigue así, sigue así, amor mío, sigue así. Llega todo alrededor, tus sueños viven en mi cuerpo. Vida aquí, nada es tuyo.